From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 22nd day of January 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. A bit later in the program, we'll check in with K-State's Dan O'Brien about the agricultural energies and discuss with him some of the Western, or at least Kansas, farmers' thoughts about acreage. They have some things to deal with in South Central Kansas as it relates to wheat and, the fact that they probably didn't get as much in the ground as they expected. And then the corn and soybean producers that are up on the northeast corner of that state. They're the number five soybean producer in the nation, by the way, kicking Indiana out of that spot in the last couple of years. And we'll see what their plans are for this spring as well when we discuss those acreage changes with Dan O'Brien. And as we close out our time together, we'll talk about the weather forecast with Don Day. He's at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. And that all happens on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, to take a look at what happened in Chicago. The markets were humming along, kind of not changed very much for most of the day, Wayne, and then suddenly there was something in the news that moved at least the beans and a bit the corn lower. What happened?
Well, there came a little headline across that said U.S. turns down China offer, preparatory trade talks. So China turned down the meeting to schedule a new meeting. And when that came across, we watched beans drop as much as 13 cents and corn got down about a nickel. We come back and close about half those amounts down, but instead of being higher on the day, that sort of put a dent in the celebration. Wheat did come back and close a little higher on the day, up about four. A lot of anticipation there could be some big Chinese buying, but also that the Russian exports are slowing down immensely, and we're seeing some business being shipped to the U.S. And of course, the export sales or export shipments this morning, we beat all the estimates as far as the corn, beans, and wheat, both, all three. So, you know, we did have somewhat of a positive attitude going into this with the good idea of China offering to buy quite a bit more stuff and the wheat being added to the list. So this sort of threw a bump in the road.
I know over the weekend, Friday, Saturday, that ADM and its brokers across the nation met in Chicago. I suspect you heard about a bullish look at the marketplace and a bearish look at the marketplace and everything in between. Were there any takeaways that you really thought were worthwhile repeating?
I think that, you know, one of the speeches told us that they're still wanting to buy dips in the corn and the wheat, and they're still wanting to sell rallies in the beans just because of the large world stocks. You know, a lot of optimism towards the Chinese deal, hoping that something can be cut soon, sooner than later. Very little whining about lack of government reports. Actually, they sort of felt that that might be helpful rather than harmless. But that way. But all in all, a little bit of optimism coming into things, just thinking that, but the top side of a lot of the rallies, you know, above $10 in the beans and above $4.50 in the corn, seem to be sort of outside of the realm.
Yeah, so not much on the upside, but still needing to protect mostly the downside, I suppose.
Yeah, you know, and that's just sort of scared like that. But, I mean, along the way, I was not quite as negative as could have possibly been. And we did get some, like I said, some fairly decent feelings towards the tightness of the wheat market here as Russia runs out of wheat for their export market.
So we did not have the winter wheat seedings. Was there much discussion about what was planted in the United States or lack of acreage in the United States at all?
Well, I think everybody knows that we didn't get all the wheat planted here. So, I mean, they're feeling the acres could be down. Unfortunately, unless we can pop that back into spring wheat, that just means more corn and bean acres in most cases. So, you know, that's not something we're looking forward to. But I think that if it is as low as what a lot of us are thinking, that we will see some spring wheat seedings.
Did they take up the livestock sector very much?
The livestock sector was very little talked about. A little bit of optimism. Because of China hopefully looking to want to import pork and beef. That was one of the positive aspects of it all. And they were thinking that we could maybe move up a little bit more because of the weather here. And, of course, because the weather today did not seem to help the cattle market at all as we look at the screen.
Okay, thanks so much. Anything else before I let you go for the day?
That's about it for today, Todd.
All right. Thanks, Wayne.
Thank you.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, there are a couple of different plans, but no real path to ending the shutdown. The House and the Senate will take up different versions of legislation toward that end this week, and the most important part may be the insights that these plans give to how senators and representatives feel about different issues. The Senate will vote this week on the Trump administration's immigration and border security proposal. The legislative text was unveiled Monday night, and while it's unlikely to be signed into law, the measure does give some insight into where Republican senators stand on Secretary Perdue's push to relocate the Economic Research Service and the National Institute for Food and Agriculture, or NIFA. The explanatory statement for the Agriculture FDA section cites unknown cost associated with the proposal. It calls for cost estimates and a detailed analysis of any research benefits to be included in the Trump administration's fiscal 2020 budget request when the spending blueprint is delivered to Congress in the coming weeks or months. Secretary Perdue has said the relocation would help USDA attract and keep talented employees who might be deterred by D.C.'s high cost of living and lengthy commutes. The appropriations package also supports an indefinite delay in the proposed transfer of ERS to the Office of the Chief Economist. Research advocates and some lawmakers have warned the move could place ERS analysis at risk of political influence. Insufficient information and justification relating to reorganization and relocation make moving forward on these proposals premature at this time. So goes the explanatory statement. The House will also take up another appropriations package to repay furloughed federal workers and fund the Ag Department, FDA, and every other shuttered agency except for Homeland Security. It's House Democrats' 10th bill to reopen parts of the government. The Agriculture FDA explanatory statement includes very similar language to the Senate bill, suggesting there is bipartisan support for slowing USDA's plans until further information is provided. On that note, today's the last day some Farm Service Agency or FSA offices will be open to offer basic services for ag producers, like help with existing loans and tax paperwork. Secretary Perdue told South Dakota-based WNAX on Monday that USDA continues working on creative solutions of how we can serve farmers' needs all the way. Turning our attention to trade now, European Trade Commissioner Cecilia Malmström on Friday released two draft mandates for upcoming trade talks with the United States, leaving out agriculture and keeping Washington and Brussels on a collision course over whether agricultural trade will be up for negotiation or even how they're going to begin talks. Malmström says the Europeans are ready to engage with something that could be quite quick, but she repeated the EU line that agriculture has to remain outside the negotiations, as Mr. Trump and European Commissioner President Jean-Claude Juncker agreed in July of 2018. And one final trade note, this one on why China's trillion-dollar offer is unrealistic. Beijing continues to offer to import an additional trillion-dollar in U.S. goods over time, that according to a Bloomberg report released Friday, that the Chinese are offering 6 years as a target date. But analysts and sources close to the trade negotiations told Politico that it would be nearly impossible for U.S. production to meet such a massive increase in demand. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Well, let's turn our attention now to the agricultural energies as we do each and every Tuesday. Dan O'Brien is here this week. He's with Kansas State University Extension and joins us from his offices there in Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Dan. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon, Todd.
So I know you keep pretty close track of the agricultural energies, especially ethanol and biodiesel both. Anything new to talk about this week? I know that margins have not been very good for most ethanol producers in the recent month.
Yes, well, you know, we crunch the numbers, and they haven't changed a lot here of late. We're looking at losses of 15, 17, 16 cents over the November through December, and now so far in January, and we had some losses also prior to that. You do hear now in the ag press discussions by ethanol plants of again after this prolonged time of not covering costs, having to tighten their belts up, et cetera. You do hear discussions about plant, I don't know if I would say closures, but at least going offline for some period of time. It is interesting. We have had some strength in the distillers' grain market that has been a positive thing. Has helped a little bit, but still the bigger issue is just that. Gosh, ethanol product prices of say $1.15, $1.17 per gallon in Iowa and about the same elsewhere. Just is a weak point. And then if we start to see some strength in the corn market, that just works again against profitability. So that's a negative. I should mention on the soybean biodiesel side of things that we had a month in December where, gosh, the numbers turned negative by about 14 cents a gallon, but then they've jumped back up to positive again now so far in January. So that's interesting, I guess. I don't know that that's the main driver in all that's happening in the soy sector, but to have some profitability there is a positive thing.
You mentioned DDGs jumping. Is that, and do you think, because the livestock sector, the number of beef on feed is higher?
Yes, I need to dig into that more. I always have a question about just, you know, what role exports play in some of that, and again, I don't have that answer, but you know, when you look at from November to December to January, gosh, you're up $27 a ton or $30 a ton. So it's been a marked increase. And in fact, now when news comes out in the market, people are talking about a quote weakening of distillers' grains prices. So I guess from a ethanol plant point of view, it's really a turn from what had been the main driver of profitability in the past. Now we're looking towards distillers' grains to help hold things up while the main product numbers overall are suffering. So we'll see. You know, the bigger issue has to do with gasoline and the overall motor fuels market. So I guess we have an impact on that, but those bigger, broader macroeconomic issues in the U.S. economy as it affects gasoline demands comes back and is affecting us now on the ag energy side.
Let's switch topics just a bit. I know you've been on the road like I have with the winter meeting season. You probably have been in contact with quite a few farmers there in the great state of Kansas. I want to start further to the west and to the south, where I think they had a whole lot of rain, and I don't know how widespread this was across the whole of the state, but that kept them from seeding wheat in the fall. How much of a concern is that, and how many acres do you think that are available for other crops?
Well, without question, the main concern last fall during October was getting the fall crops out, and particularly corn. We had some beans that were affected, as other parts of the country were too. Grain sorghum is probably the last crop standing in a lot of areas, and we still have sizable acreage in north central Kansas, hundreds, thousands of acres that have not been able to get either corn or grain sorghum out of. So you wonder about again what those millions of bushels, again, how do we count those? But anyway, we have those issues. So last fall, the main priority was to try to get the fall crops out, and that ran headlong into the need to plant or to seed wheat, and we had lots of discussions about delayed planting date impacts on hard red winter wheat acres, because again, the date to plant that came and went, you know, and we were still trying to get the other crops out. So so here, again, in trying to talk to people, I mentioned this issue and to some audiences, you get nodding, knowing, positive responses, saying yes, that affected them. Bring it up in one or two other settings, and they get a very energetic pushback and say, no, it's a great looking wheat crop. So I guess this is Kansas. You know, we have varying opinions, and what did get planted has had a good amount of moisture. We had problems last fall for what did get planted in the south central part of the state, and you could see it from the road. It just did not look good. But again, we've had moisture. It's a resilient crop. So whatever did get planted, I think you have to, you know, with the moisture and conditions we've had, you would hope and probably anticipate it would come through one way, shape or another. But how many acres were we short? And gosh, right now it's kind of a finger in the wind situation to figure out what's actually going on. And Informa came out prior to the expected USDA report.
Yes,
USDA report. Thank you very much.
It's been such a long time you forgot.
It's been a while, you know. But indicated sizable acreage reduction. So I don't know. I think the bigger issue with us in wheat is, yes, we'll figure out what the acreage number is. We have moisture with whatever we have. We'll grow a crop. What will be our protein this year? We were blessed last year with great protein and great protein amounts and has helped to give us support for our basis levels out here in the western part of the state. If we come back this coming year again and have lots of bushels at low quality, that really just kind of exacerbates the problem we were having for the last two or three years prior to last year. And that, gosh, we have a lot of wheat, but we just have a hard time moving it.
Now, to the northeastern section of Kansas where corn and soybeans, a lot of soybeans are grown. What's the acreage mix expected to be this spring?
Every anticipation was that, gosh, we're just going to not plant near as many soybeans. Again, that's consistent with the national numbers. But since last October, November, we've had a disaster payment. A market facilitation
payment. The MFP
payment.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. That I let that slip out. Anyway, we've had that payment of $1.65 a bushel. We've had reports now of production problems down in Brazil, we have just so corn prices. I don't know that we will have all of the acreage reduction in soybeans in Kansas that has been the narrative of the market all the way through. It seems that there's some factors being supportive of this.
There seems to be two things for me. I'm of a mind that the MFP payment will cause some producers not to consider actually switching the rotations or not to react to the marketplace and what it's actually telling them in price. And the other is, once your producers there went to a corn-soybean rotation or more soybeans in their rotation, it seems unlikely they'll come out of it. Is that right?
That's true. You know, we buy and we're committed with seed, et cetera, to what in terms of what we're intending to plant. And yeah, there's the inflexibility of our rotations. We're not likely to go to have continuous much of anything other than in Kansas, continuous corn.
Yeah.
We've done quite a bit of that, but with soybeans in there, we tend to rotate.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd. Take care.
You too. Dan O'Brien is with Kansas State University Extension. When we come back, we'll take a look at the weather forecast. Don Day will be here from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Listen to us on demand at WILLAG.org. It's a Tuesday afternoon. We're now joined by Don Day. He's at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, though he's traveling today on the winter meeting circuit and some other things. I think you're where? In Sioux City or are you in Sioux Falls?
Sioux Falls.
Well, there you go. So you didn't get away from Cheyenne to find better conditions, though. I think they have a lot of snow, don't they?
Yeah, no, I need to pick places that are warmer, that's for sure.
Yeah, so tell me about the cold and the snow that's making its way or has made its way across the bulk of the Corn Belt, especially those western areas where a lot of cattle are outside.
Yeah, and I tell you, we're in a pattern that's going to be very stressful on livestock producers across a large swath of the nation. As we currently do have a storm system moving through the Midwest right now and into the Great Lakes. It's bringing another round of snow and cold, and there are more systems coming. They're spaced about 2 days apart. I would put these in the category of clippers. They're coming out of Alberta, sliding southeast into the Rockies and turning east. And every time one of these come through, they're going to drag in some Arctic air and a brief period of snowfall and some very cold wind chills. And anytime there's a warming trend, it's going to be maybe a day or two at very most before the next wave of cold comes in. And this is a pattern, Todd, that is going to stick with us probably for at least a week to 10 days before there's any relief.
So we have quite a bit of snow on the ground. Will these clippers bring dustings or very much more snow?
You know, each one of these has got the potential to drop in that 1 to 3 to 2 to 4 inch range. So not a lot of snow. Problem is, though, the frequency of these, with the fact that it's staying cold, it's piling up. It's starting to add up, and it's going to be hard to melt away. So that's going to cover the ground in many areas and keep livestock producers busy, keeping those feeding schedules going.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem may be that if it gets warm enough, you get an ice layer on top, and then you start to build up a snow, a little ice, snow, a little ice, snow, a little ice. And it's hard for livestock and any other animal to break through that. So it'll be interesting to talk with you over time about this. When we look out to next week, how many of these two-day systems do you think we'll get between then and now?
They just keep going. Probably this is a pattern that's got a good 7 to 10 days in it. So we've got another pretty strong push of cold air and snow coming in Sunday night, Monday into the Rockies, and that would put it Tuesday into Wednesday across the upper Midwest and Plain States, and then probably another one towards the following weekend. So it is going to go well into early February with these systems about every 2 or 3 days.
And I should be careful when I talk about ice. I'm talking about snow, and then we freeze, and then snow, and we freeze on top. Not ice that would be accumulating on trees and such and cause a whole lot more damage in terms of the electrical grid and trees. Turn your attention to South America now. What do we know about changes there, if any at all?
Well, really not too many changes, although there's been a little more rain in some of the key growing areas of Brazil. That is still an area of concern with some dryness and heat that's really gone on for a good 3 or 4 weeks now. There hasn't been a change, and we don't expect a major change in that pattern here for a little bit longer. Argentina is faring well, but a few dry areas showing up there as well.
Hey, thanks so much, Don.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. One other note from Don. I asked him if there were any analogous years to this one. 77, 78, when there was so much snow. That's the year he thought that this actually looked like, at least at this point. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.